Today, we're going to be talking about investment strategy in terms of what we're doing, what we're thinking here at Financial Sense Wealth Management for 2024 in light of what the consensus expects. And that is, again, for a soft landing, meager gains in the stock market after the big run that we saw last year, as well as the Fed being able to cut interest rates. And with us, of course, is our president and founder of Financial Sense Wealth Management, Jim Poplava. Jim, you just released an article we published on our website, financialsense.com, where you talked about what needs to happen this year in order to see this Goldilocks scenario basically play out for lower rates, lower inflation, a soft landing. What's your view on this?
Well, the first thing, Chris, our view is the recession has been delayed. It hasn't been eliminated. And I wrote an article and I said, for the soft landing to take place, the Fed is going to have to move in quickly. This is the consensus that Wall Street is hoping for. They start cutting interest rates in March. They cut interest rates four or five times. We get down to a 3% Fed funds rate or somewhere around there by the end of the year. Well, in order for that to happen, and especially when we just got the uptick in inflation this week, it was a bad number. So that sort of took the let's cut interest rates in March off the table, at least temporarily. So I wanted to lay out for this scenario to take place for a soft landing. And remember, there's only been about two of those in the last half century that the Fed has been able to engineer. The last one was in 1995. And so the first one I said is long-term interest rates will have to come down and remain low well into 2025 and 2026. And the reason for that, Chris, is a lot of companies have basically locked in their debt at low interest rates. They did that by 2020. I can't think of, homeowners who didn't lock in on low mortgage rates. Same thing applied to corporations. They locked in on low levels of debt. And they're enjoying the best of both worlds right now because they've locked in on low rates on their debt, but they're also getting high treasury yields on their cash because corporations, because they keep billions of dollars in cash, they use treasury bills. And so right now you're getting about 5.3% on treasury bills, and these corporations are paying 2.5% to 3% on their debt. So the best of both worlds, low debt rates, high cash rates. Well, that changes in 2025 when about 50% of that corporate debt will come due. The big companies will not have problems, but the smaller companies will. The second issue is smaller companies were not able to lock in on the low rates that a lot of these blue chip companies were able to do. So a lot of these companies could be facing 7 to 9% interest rates on their debt, Chris, and that's really going to harm a lot of these small cap stocks. So that's another second reason why rates have to come down and remain down for several years. Number three, the consumer. Two-thirds of our economy is consumption. And if you look at the last 24 months, consumers have been hit hard by inflation. Food costs are up over 30%. Utilities are up over 30%. Gasoline prices up over 30%. Medical cost up close to 20%. Shelter cost up over 20%. Now, when we say lower levels of inflation, remember, folks, that doesn't mean that your food costs are going to start going down. They're still going up, but maybe not as a rapid a rate. So a lot of the surplus checks from the pandemic are gone. Consumers have gone into debt, especially last year, where credit card debt went up by $923 billion. So for consumers to maintain spending, inflation will have to come down, and wages will have to rise to keep pace of spending to support a growing economy. Number four, with yields on treasuries rising, banks are experiencing an outflow of close to $800 billion. And remember, banks use their deposits to make loans. So if their deposit base is shrinking, their loans are shrinking. And according to the Federal Reserve Senior Loan Officer Survey, bank lending practices have tightened by 51% for residential mortgages and 40 to 43% for commercial and industrial loans. Number five, rising government debt and deficits is raising the debt to GDP ratio. And right now, government debt has risen close to 600% since 2000. So this raises the issue of crowding out the debt markets and is making our treasury market more volatile, as reflected in something we follow called the MOVE Index, which it's kind of like the VIX for the treasury market. Number six, factory utilization rate, the amount of factories that are operating at capacity, is roughly about 79%. So a lot of companies still have pricing power and are raising prices. The Fed doesn't like that. They would like to see factory utilization rates come down, less pricing power for companies. They want to see things in place, whether it's wages or companies raising prices. They want to see that come down to feel comfortable that they've got inflation under control. And the labor market is tightened. They need to see the unemployment rate go up. So all these seven factors are going to have to take place before the Fed is going to move in quickly and start lowering interest rates as soon as March, is what Wall Street has anticipated.
So as you laid out, there's basically seven different things that are going to have to play out in order for this Goldilocks, low inflation, low interest rates, soft landing view play out. The title of the article that we've just posted on our website, it's called Testing the Consensus and the Goldilocks 7. And as you lay out, you believe that the consensus view is going to be tested this year. That may be in the back half of this year, at least according to Jim Welsh, who we spoke with in our last program. But let's talk about investment strategy, putting all these things, boiling it down into what we like. What are the areas that we're invested in currently?
Chris, at the top of the list is AI and crypto, precious metals, energy. We still think the Permian peaks this year or next, as we just talked about with our geologist expert, Art Berman, this week. I still love dividend blue chip stocks, especially when you're getting 4 to 6% yields that are better than what you can get in 10-year treasuries. And those yields are growing at 6 to 9%. A year, Chris, it's one of the best inflation hedges I've known. We also like tax-free bonds and laddered bonds with intermediate maturities somewhere in the 3 to 5 year range, because we do expect rates will be dropping by summer, and gone will be 5% T-bill rates. T-bill rates will be down into the 3, maybe low 4% range, depending on how bad things develop going forward. So we like municipals. We like intermediate bonds. We like dividend, blue chip aristocrats. We like energy, precious metals, AI, and crypto. All of those, Chris, are in our portfolio now.
I mean, that's pretty diverse. Like you said, with an exposure to artificial intelligence and the crypto space, but also, you know, precious metals, energy, dividend, blue chip stocks, tax-free bonds. So that's almost like a barbell approach, if you might call it that, where you have exposure to some of those high growth areas, AI and crypto, but also on the defensive side as well.
Yeah, because let's take, for example, inflation. Inflation for food, gasoline, utilities are up 30% since 2021. Shelter is up 20%. And if you take a look at housing, housing is no longer affordable. When you have, I think mortgage rates are down to about 6.5% now. But Chris, I mean, you know, we call a millionaire in California a homeowner. Homes that were going for, I have a friend that bought a house for $250,000. Back, I think it was in the year 1998, that house is now going for $1.9 million. How many people can afford to buy a house at $1.9 million in California with a 6.5% mortgage? Millennials are just out of the housing market. If you are retired, how are you going to be able to afford these costs unless you have a rising source of income? Just think about it. The inflation numbers, Chris, as they're presented, I don't know anybody that believes inflation is just 3%. The way the government manipulates the inflation numbers with hedonics and substitution in various ways where they make inflation less than it appears to be, what I look at is, what are the household expenses that you face every single year. You have to buy food. You have to buy gas for your car. You have to pay for utilities. You have to pay for shelter, either rent or your housing costs. And you also have medical. Chris, none of those are going up as little as 3% a year. They're going up double digits. So the best way I know to handle inflation is by owning high-quality dividend aristocratic stocks. These, and here's the good news. The average yield, for example, the average yield in our portfolio is over 4%. And last year, those dividends went up at 9%. And over the last couple of years, they've been going up at 10 to 11%. So one of the ways that you can keep up with inflation is have a predictable, and more importantly, a reliable source of income that gives you a pay increase every single year and is not as vacillating as the stock market. I mean, take a look at the stock market last year, up 20 and 30%, but most of that coming with just a handful of stocks. The year before, it was down 20 and 30%. So how do you predict your income when one year stocks fall 30%, the next year they're up 30%. So that is not as reliable, in my opinion, as what you can get with a dividend aristocrat stock. And many of these stocks have been raising those dividends for 60 and 70 years every single year. That's what I call predictable, and that's what I call reliable. And you're not going to get that if you're investing in a mutual fund or an ETF. Yep, maybe over the long run, they might eventually raise those dividends. But mutual funds and ETFs are subject to cash flows. Money moving in, the managers have more money to buy stocks. Money moving out, the managers have to sell those stocks. And the best example I can give you is everybody was talking about the Magnificent Seven last year. What they forget talking about is how the Magnificent Seven stocks lost 40 to 50%, way more than the indexes in 2022, because it works in reverse. Every dollar you put in an index fund, 30 cents goes into those seven stocks. Likewise, every dollar you pull out of an index fund, 30 cents comes out of those stocks, which is why they lost 50% in 2022. So right at the top of our list, what we like are dividend paying aristocrats. Once again, they're the best inflation hedge I know on the planet. If you're a retiree and you're relying on income, do you want to be in something that's up 50% one year and is down 50% the next year? How are you going to have any predictable stream of income to pay your increasing costs, which in this decade are going to be going up every single year? And I hate to say, inflation is not going away this decade, and I expect it to come back, and it's going to get even higher.
So I think it's worth saying here that at Financial Sense Wealth Management, we have a number of different portfolios that we manage with various different investment objectives, depending on the risk tolerance and the suitability of each individual person. So with some of these portfolios, they will have a higher weighting towards the more growth sectors versus the more conservative objectives will obviously be much more weighted towards the dividend blue chip paying stocks and towards the bond section where you're going to be relying more upon the yields. So just keep that in mind when we're discussing how we're invested and the way we're navigating 2024.
The second area we like is energy. You heard my discussion with Art Berman, a very well world-renowned energy specialist. He's a petroleum geologist on the show. And one of the things we're watching very closely, and as Art talked about in his article, the beginning of the end for the Permian, is well productivity is dropping 20 and 30%. And there are many, many signs. It's not just Art. It's Gehring and Rosenzweig, who you've had on your program. Gehring and Rosenzweig thinks the Permian peaks this year. And as Art alluded to in the interview and in his article, the beginning of the end of the Permian, well productivity is dropping by 30%. So when the Permian peaks, U.S. production will begin to decline. And so one of the biggest increases of global energy output over the last decade, allowing economies to grow, has been U.S. shale production. because U.S. production went from 4 million barrels to 13.2 million barrels, 9 million barrels coming from shale production alone. So we're still going to be using fossil fuels. And, you know, I don't buy the idea by 2030 EVs will replace gasoline engines. Simply not going to happen. So oil companies are making a lot of money. They're flush with cash. They're buying back stock and increasing dividends. Many of those dividend increases, Chris, are 6 to 8%. We own one company that increased its dividends 21% last year. So it's another area. You know, I've always liked energy. We're not the only ones. Warren Buffett is very, very big in energy now. Next to his Apple investment, energy is his second biggest investment. The other area that I like, and kudos to you, Chris, you've been into crypto and AI way ahead of the game. I think you were in crypto, what, over a decade ago? You were doing interviews on crypto, and I know you've been doing AI for 3 years. So we've been invested in AI probably the last 9 months. We're more on the pick and shovels area. I own two AI stocks for our income portfolio. One pays a real nice dividend. The other one is probably one of the probably key AI companies. They're working, they're going to use AI working with drug companies in which they're going to get a substantial fee up front. But more importantly, when the drug comes to the market, they're going to get a royalty off the drug sales. So look for major breakthroughs in drug therapy coming as a result of AI. And we own the company that does that. So between the dividend paying AI stock, which is the originator of AI, and the AI, the other AI stock, it averages out to about 2.5% dividend, which is still about one full percentage point above the S&P 500. Now, when it comes to crypto, there are three ways to own it. You can buy crypto directly. And on Wednesday this week, the SEC approved for crypto ETFs. So a second way to own it would be through an ETF. And a third way is a way that we've discovered of doing it, because I really wouldn't want to own crypto if I'm going to sit on it and pay some fee. You know, you might as well buy Bitcoin or Ethereum directly. We found another way to do it without paying fees. And so we're into crypto because I think that has become a new asset class.
So let's talk about one of the areas that you mentioned at the beginning of the show, and that's with bonds. What are we doing in the bond space?
We're really big on municipal bonds. Take a look at the deficit is now growing at almost 2.5 times the rate of GDP growth. We crossed $34 trillion the first week of the year, and we'll probably end up this year somewhere between $37, maybe $37.5 trillion in debt. They're going to be raising taxes. You know, Chris, I don't care if it's Republicans or Democrats. At this point, it is simply math, because over 30% of government spending is being done with borrowed money, which is unsustainable. So we like municipal bonds. One area we specialize and we love are school bonds, because we can take a look at property taxes. And one of the reasons I like this is property tax revenues are rising. Why? They're rising along with real estate. Think of your own home. Think of your property taxes and the bill you get from your local municipality each year to support schools. Those property taxes are going up because the value of your home is going up. So we find this a real safe way to play municipals, because I know the income stream is going to support the interest payments, and that income stream is going to be going up because you, as a property tax payer, are going to be paying the government more taxes. And so I feel more secure with the revenues. So we like municipals, and we also like corporate bonds, but short term, 3 to 5 years, because I do think by mid-year, we're going to see interest rates start to come down as the economy weakens further. And there's so many signs that that's getting ready to happen, whether it's the ISM manufacturing, whether it's service spending, whether it is the unemployment numbers, job switching and quitting is declining. And so you're going to see an uptick in employment. And one of the things that people are saying, oh, gosh, the employment numbers look good. What they're not telling you is what will happen is they'll report a job number like 150,000 jobs. And then a month later, they revise them down to 100. And nearly a third of those jobs to 40% of those jobs are coming from government. So the economy is much weaker than it is reported on. So we like corporate bonds in the 3 to 5 year range. I don't want to go long term because, yeah, if you're going to trade bonds, which we don't, we buy individual bonds, we sit on them, we collect the interest, and the bonds mature, we get our money back. That's the way we like to play the bond market. And, you know, one of the reasons we're extending our maturities is the Fed will be cutting, but we see that probably in the second half of the year. And when that happens, gone are going to be the 5 and 4% T-bill rates or CD rates that people are enjoying now. So you want to, we're locking in right now because we anticipate interest rates coming down.
Let's talk about precious metals, one of the areas that you also mentioned where we're exposed to. I want to point out that we've been speaking with Jeff Christian at CPM Group here for many, many years on our show. Jeff has been predicting ever since late last decade, 2019, into the early part of this decade, that the 2023 to 2025 time period will very likely mark another bullish move in the precious metal space. And he was predicting that we would see new highs in gold over this time period. We saw that. So his forecast has so far played out pretty well. We just caught up with him, and he thinks that we are going to continue to see precious metals push high over the next couple years, this through 2024 and 2025 at least, with a lot of the political and economic turbulence that we currently see. What is our view, and how are we investing in precious metals?
Well, we agree with that view that precious metals are heading higher. We expect to see new highs this year. And one of the big driving forces behind it, it's been the largest buying of gold by central banks in probably the last half century. I think they bought like 1,400 tons last year. And what you're seeing, Chris, is a movement away from the dollar. So you're seeing China, Russia, Iran, even Saudi Arabia, and some of the emerging market countries like Brazil that are now trading with China in yuan, and they're doing settlement. If you have excess yuan you don't want to keep, you can exchange it for gold. So gold, central banks are big buyers. They're going to be one of the drivers of that. The other thing is the green transition movement. As we have interviewed a number of guests on the program, when you're going to green transition, green, I don't care if you're talking about EVs, you're talking about windmills, you're talking about solar, they consume 5 to 6 times the amount of raw materials. That's lithium, cobalt, nickel, silver, copper, and especially copper. We see copper shortages this decade. So we love our three favorites are gold, copper, and silver. And we haven't seen major copper mines discovered over the last 10 years. You're seeing copper ore grades decline. You're seeing it in Chile. And even more concerning, some of the largest producers of silver, whether it's China or Mexico, are seeing falling production as their reserves decline. And you need silver in almost everything, just as you need copper. Another factor when we've been talking about debt, it's not just U.S. debt, it's European government debt, it's Asian government debt, Chinese government debt. So what we're going to see is currency debasement and devaluation, along with, I predict, debt monetization that will occur by the Fed between the years 2025 and 2028, because by then we're going to be over $50 trillion in debt. And just the interest rate alone will consume a majority of government revenue. So they're going to have to start monetizing. So right now, Chris, we own the miners, which are grossly undervalued and paying dividends and much more disciplined, I would have to say, in this bull cycle than they were in the 00 decade. They were basically reckless in the 00 decade, overpaying in their acquisitions, spending a lot of money. That's not the case today. You've got very top management in the companies we own. They're tight. They have strong balance sheets. They've been buying back stocks. And I want to explain something that I think the miners are doing that, and you're seeing this in the energy space, which I think is very appropriate. We know that commodity prices fluctuate. You take a look at 2022, we had oil prices at $110 a barrel. They dropped down below 70 last year. So what a lot of these companies are doing, they're generating large amounts of cash flow. So they have a regular base dividend, And some of these companies, like one of the companies we own, increased their base dividend 21%. But they also issue special dividends. Now, last year, the special dividends were eliminated in some companies, but on other companies, they still issued special dividends. Like if you had a quarter where the price of energy went up in the third quarter, there was a special dividend. Like one of the companies we own issued a special dividend of $1 a share in March, and then they issued a $1.50 special dividend in December. So overall, the dividend yield on the stock was 6%. So not bad. And that to me is a more rational way to handle the commodities if you're a miner, when you can see wide fluctuations in price, whether it's copper, silver, gold, or even oil. So once again, going back to companies are much more disciplined than where they were in the 00 decade. And one of the reasons we like, as I mentioned, many of the dividend stories we've been talking about here, and I'm reminded of a quote from Warren Buffett. He said, when stock yields as much as bonds, you're getting the growth for free. And so we've got bond yields at 4%, and we've got our dividend yields over 4%. So in the words of Warren Buffett, if you can make as much as a bond, whatever growth you get, whether it's growth in asset price or it's growth in dividends, you're getting that for free. That concludes our weekend edition of the Financial Sense News Hour. To speak with our financial planning and wealth management team, give us a call at 888-486-3939, or you can visit us on our website, financialsensewealth.com. If you aren't already a subscriber to our weekday podcast and would like to listen to more of our content, where we regularly interview book authors, industry experts, and market strategists from around the globe, go to the Financial Sense website and hit the subscribe button. On behalf of the Financial Sense News Hour and the Financial Sense Wealth Management team, we hope you have a pleasant weekend.
Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.